Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show.
The show is not streaming. Yeah, good evening. This,
it will in a minute. It does that when you call in late. It's done that 3 weeks in a row. Did that last week and it went right on.
It's not doing it now.
Well, I don't know why it's doing it.
Okay.
Just type in.
That's great.
So, anyway, why don't we click George on?
We can't. He's not. We can't. There's nothing. He's not going to be able to hear us.
Oh, that's right. Oh, he'll hear us. It's just not streaming. He'll hear us on the radio, on his telephone.
I don't think so.
Oh, I do.
Just
means it's not going over the internet. That's all
okay.
That means.
Good evening. This is the LA Steel Show. We're sorry that for the delay. That we had a problem with the streaming. Good evening. Is this George? Are you with us? And we're here tonight with George Dixon, and he's on the line, and we're going to join him right away.
Hello, George. How are you?
Hello.
Hi, George.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Yeah, we had a problem. There was a delay in getting on there. It wasn't streaming.
But I heard everything you were saying over the telephone line.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's great. I understand. I that could have happened because it wasn't streaming. Now it's streaming.
It said on the screen that it wasn't streaming.
So you heard us saying that it wasn't, that we don't know if that it wasn't streaming?
Well, that was then. This is now. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Okay, good. So that happened 2 weeks in a row, so I think it depends on how quickly you call in. So what's going on with you, George? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling much better. I'm sorry for last week, but I had some other things to take care of.
Well,
but,
you take care of those things when they come up, right?
There you go.
We're glad you're feeling better and you're feeling up to being on. Last week we did a little bit on the Mayan calendar.
Uh-huh.
And
actually, on the midpoint, and
right.
And we were talking about that. I guess you wanted to continue that tonight. You wanted to talk about the midpoint, I believe.
Well, yeah, I think it would be a point that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to relate it to the last cycle, which takes us from 1962 to 1972.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, it's the second turn, but it's the start of things. And, you know, I've been trying to grasp, you know, what this cycle is. And the only thing I can go on is, I think, my own experiences. And going back to 1962 to 1970, it was a roller coaster ride, but it happened very quick. And so many things happened.
You know, what bothers me when you think about that time period, we had five assassinations,
mm-hmm.
Of the five major assassinations during that period, political assassinations. One was Malcolm X, the other was Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, and there was one more. Malcolm X, John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King.
Robert Kennedy.
Maybe that was it.
I think that was it. That was all. That's what destroyed the left in this
country. Right, and then on top of that, then you had the resignation of Nixon,
mm-hmm.
right?
Was that
actually had the election of Nixon in 68.
Mm-hmm.
And then, 72. 73, 74. Then you had the resignation.
Yeah, that was
and
after
all of that.
That
mess. So that was.
Well, let's don't jump ahead of ourselves now.
It was also the end of the Vietnam War.
Uh-huh.
You know, right at the height of it and at the end of it.
That was a very turbulent time.
Really.
But it was also a music renaissance.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Lots of creativity, and those bands are still going strong. So a lot of those bands that emerged in that time period.
Yeah.
They're still recording.
They're in their
60s, but they're still recording, and they still have careers, which is just amazing to me.
You with us, George?
Yeah, I'm still here. You know, I'm trying to remember back in those years and the changes that happened. But it was rebellion, not against society, but against the old ways. And the old ways was, you know, the Depression years and the war years. And so many things have changed. I mean, you take James Dean, what he did to movies and to, you know, the younger crowd, where, you know, they could see that somebody could go beyond the, you know, the norms with hairstyles and so forth and openly, you know, talk about their sexual lives or, you know, their love life. And it was a time where people seen that there is a change, but it wasn't until the 60s where they realized that within themselves, or the restrictions, by lifting those restrictions, and they were able to express themselves in different fashion, good and bad. And it was just breaking loose.
Well,
and
musically, I mean, musically was phenomenal.
I don't think we've ever had a time period since
and
like that.
Politically, it was phenomenal as well. You know, you had a few years of 10 years, really, not 10, but maybe 8 years, up until 68, that you had tremendous liberalism. Right, tremendous liberalism with John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King, the civil rights movement.
And a lot of energy.
And LBJ, you know, and his civil rights and, you know, war on poverty and, you know, the Peace Corps started and VISTA program started and all of these incredible...
A lot of integration of schools.
Yeah, you know, all of these things were happening there. A tremendously volatile time. Plus, plus you had in '68, you had the Hungarian Revolution, Czechoslovakian Revolution. You had,
right.
You had the Chinese Revolution. I mean, you had all. I mean, it was the world
worldwide.
Was ablaze. The world was ablaze.
In change.
Yeah, and you know, it just seems funny that now that we're approaching the midpoint. Now that we're in that same time
cycle,
we're seeing this to the same kind of changes going on politically. We're deep into
a lot of
war.
Turbulence.
We've got all kinds of stuff. You've suddenly got a liberal president in the United States.
So what would be your approach by what we've learned from the 60s and the 70s? What would be your approach that we should take now as things are happening or coming full circle again? The same things are coming to the surface. How
well,
would you handle
that? Intervene it.
Yeah, I think.
How would you intervene it?
We've got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you got to get off this wheel here and
stop
and,
fighting.
Start pulling people out. Start looking at the true culprits. Okay, the Wall Street culprits, the banking cartels and whatnot that are driving, that are fueling this stuff.
Leo, I understand your point. But what good would it do for you to start pointing fingers and pulling people out and making them accountable for themselves? That wouldn't take care of the situation now. It would just feed your anger or frustration.
They're causing it. They're still causing it. I mean, these are not. This is an ongoing thing. I mean,
it's a war of economics. It always has been.
Yeah.
It's a war of. Money fueling more money.
Well, see, the problem is that you're holding yourself back from changing that by following the norm or following the and trying to trying to correct the wrongs the party is doing or that the idea is doing and put it in motion. You know, we don't have a problem with energy. I mean, we have alternative energies, and this is brought to us by day five of day six, or the daytime period of five. We have the resources now. We can get power out of water, out of air. And, you know, what's stopping us from implementing this and changing our whole concept of a need for petroleum?
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Of becoming self-sustaining instead of looking backwards on what was, you have to look forward in what can be. But that's how change is created.
But unless
but you gotta put it in motion.
Well, they say unless you learn from history, it'll repeat itself. You know, and that's what's going on. You know that we're running into the same problems that we had that are it's just this vicious cycle of spending and consumerism and materialism.
And until we stop that.
And credit and more credit.
Well, we're gonna have to replace it somehow, and that's what's happening right now. It's not a matter of rebuilding or
not replacing it.
You have to replace it.
Oh, no, George, you misunderstand me. You can't have a worldwide Ponzi scheme, and that's what we have.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot live like that anymore.
Well, right? I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's a different system that we're going to now. And, you know, this is different from the last system of paper money, or banks for that matter. You know, it's all electrons and it's all a magnetic strip. So it's all illusionary. There's nothing of real value there.
Oh,
and
I agree with you, but it's still a Ponzi scheme.
But and it's back.
Well, I think it's being exposed for what it is, yes, but, you know, it's facing the consequences now, and there's no way to rectify it. But, you know, it's just part of... part of our thinking, our legal thinking.
We have to stop thinking in that way.
But the real problem is now, if everything being electronic, and if it goes to an electronic currency, and a card currency, then what happens is you got
it is Leo.
What?
It has gone to that. It's not that it's going to.
You still got some. I still got a few dollars in my pocket. All right, I can go out and spend those dollars. All right, and as long as you still have some cash currency, all right, that the transactions really aren't. They can't stop you from spending that. All right.
Well, understanding the Ponzi scheme, that paper money that you have is worthless notes. It's nothing of value.
So
it's an illusion.
Well, it's not because what it.
Yes,
does,
it is, Leo.
Oh no! What it does, it still gives you the anonymity that to create a private transaction. All right. Once you go to a credit card or to a debit card or to whatever,
they can track.
That's all traced. It's all tracked. Okay, and it's all traced. And at any time, they can stop you. They can put a hold on it.
That's
and say,
right.
Oh yeah, you didn't pay your taxes, or yeah, you're a terrorist or some other crap. Okay, and then before you know it, I mean, you're out of dough. And if you don't have a cash currency, okay, or cash, you don't have some means to
gold in the vault.
Yeah.
But Leo, do you want to know something?
Yeah.
There is a town down in North Carolina now, and the town folk, they have their own money.
Well, they do.
And what they do is they use that as a person would barter, and that would represent something of real value. And this is the way the town is been going, where they're accepting these notes for payment for goods.
Well,
and now it's come to the point where the banks are accepting these.
No.
Well, that's all well and good, but what if they say, gee, George, we're not going to accept yours?
Yeah,
right?
But Leo, you have to understand. It is happening now, or it is being put in motion, and it's part of the motion that we're experiencing. That we see the illusion for what it is, and here what people are doing is going back to the basics. You know, goods for goods, and it's even with our law. Understand that common law is no longer used, but what you have is that you have equity law or universal commercial code laws or codes, I should say, that are being followed, and they. They represent the old laws that we used to have through common law. Now everything is a contract. Everything is a signature. Everything you do is actually, you are a debtor because you are part of the system or you are part of the corporation.
Yeah. Well, I don't like it, George.
Well, yeah, but what do you do?
Well, what do? You try to avoid doing it.
Yeah, but, well, you find other means, too, and that is, if you could barter with your local store, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, no.
And you're eliminating the middleman.
It's been done around here for a long time. They have green bucks in Berkshire County.
Okay.
They've had that for a long time. They also have currency over there in New York State, and around Cornell somewhere.
Yes.
They've had it for quite a while. There are different places that have it, and it works quite well. The only problem is there are several problems. One, like Leo said, maybe somebody decides they're not going to take it. The other is that it can be easily counterfeited, and there's several problems that they have with it. But it's worked for quite a while, the greenbucks in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I know that there are many businesses that accept it up in Berkshire County, and it's like a barter kind of system.
Well, understanding the concept here is keeping part of that wealth, something that's of value,
in your
hands.
Yeah. Keeping it local.
Keeping it local, but also have something of value, just like you may not have something that I could use, but, you know, with 10 bushels of corn, I can barter with Joe down the street for some chickens for the next month or so. But you see, you know, it's something of value that people will take.
Right.
That's just part of the changes that we're experiencing now. And it's not a matter of making the system any better, because it has to fall and it has to be redone. And by redoing, you know, it's starting out fresh, something new. And that's what's being put into motion right now. In the meanwhile, the rest is falling down, just like the banks. You know, they're not going to go up again. It's going to go down.
Yeah. So what do people do to protect themselves, George? What kind of steps do you advise people to take, or what are you doing?
Well, I think be more aware, you know, of connecting yourself, you know, with the outside world. When I say connecting, I'm talking about relying on credit cards or relying on resources that you don't have in your hand. You know,
you should buy more durable goods, buy more tradable goods, you know, right now that you may need.
Well, you know, let's just deal with the basics right now, because, you know, a lot of those people that are losing their jobs, you know, what part-time a job they're able to capture, that is the main source of income. And a whole family has to work around that if they like it or not. So, you know, it's less money, but people are going to be more aware of what they're spending for, or what they need and what they don't need.
So people are going to economize. That's what they're doing.
So what do you think they're going to be trading for, George?
Excuse me?
What do you think the trade deal? What do you think the deals are going to be?
I don't know, Leo. You know, it's. I think it will come down individually, where a person will be held accountable for the talents and how their talents are needed. You know, pushing a pencil is not really productive unless you need somebody, or somebody needs you to push a pencil or write something. It's not like a trade or something that you can do with your hands that's independent, let's say, of a corporation or of a job.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
You really didn't answer my question. What are you doing yourself, and what would you advise people to do?
I don't know. I think it's just a lifestyle of living, thinking differently. You know, I think a little differently now because I am retired. My wife and I both. I mean, we're not really worried or put too much into that because.
People that take their money out of the stock market, take money out of banks. I mean, what do you do with that? If you say the whole system is changing, are you taking your assets and doing something different with them?
Yeah. Well, it's not that I'm doing something different with them. I'm just trying to keep them liquid and something of value, you know. Understanding the laws of the land, you know, people believe they can hoard gold and so forth, and it's valuable. It is, but understand that gold has been federalized, and you can't own more than 30 ounces of gold. You know, you can only possess it. And, you know, in a time of need, you know, the government can come in and confiscate all of that, and you have nothing to say about it. But it's just part of our system. There are other forms of money, silver. Now, I believe some of these new laws in the last couple of years, it's been federalized also. But for years, people have been hoarding silver. And, you know, some people with bars, but a lot of people buy silver coins.
Uh-huh. And they buy gold coins, too.
Excuse me?
They buy gold coins, too, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so are those, the government can come in and take those?
Well, yes, yes, very much so. But I'm saying it's a lot easier to barter, let's say, with a 10-cent dime piece than it is with a $20 gold piece. I mean, you, first of all, in bartering, you have to find somebody that will accept, you know, what you have in trade. And, you know, for years, you remember, well, back in the 1800s, you've seen a lot of scales, and they would go by weight.
Yep.
And basically, the weight of a quarter, you know, is 2.5 times that of a dime, actual weight. So I'm saying, you know, you have something of value that is measured. So, you know, instead of, like I said, giving somebody a $20 gold piece for a loaf of bread, you know, a dime will do. In fact, the cost of it, the cost of a loaf of bread, maybe a real, the cost is 10 cents real money. Where back in the 1900s, you know, a loaf of bread, silver piece that you gave was equal to what we give now. So, you know, it hasn't changed. It has value. So I'm saying you have to have something of value that other people, first of all, want and will accept. And it's a matter of using that as a form of barter or currency or value.
So what you're saying is that people should put their assets into something that other people will want, like coins?
Well, something of value. Yeah, something that, you know, would
great
be needed.
Coins, artwork, anything that has great value, that's our sustained value.
Mm-hmm.
Any value, you know, I don't know.
But then on the other hand...
Well, yeah.
The government can come in and take your coins?
Yes, they can. Yes. Well, it's part of these banksters here.
how would they know you had them?
Well, first of all, everything is registered, even gold bullions and so forth. They all have a number. They're all numbered back.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And coins.
Mm-hmm.
So coin collectors and things, all this stuff is registered, people.
Well, yeah, they have a record of what they have,
and who they bought it from, and where, and how much.
Well, yeah, I don't know the particulars, you know, that of that trade, but I'm sure there's somebody taking note of something of value like that. I mean, gold and silver, you can go back thousands of years. You know, it's priceless and it's worth value, and somebody's going to watch it.
Oh yeah, no, that's what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we know this guy. He's been on our show a few times.
Andrew Gauz.
He's a gold bug, you know. And
uh-huh.
A coin collector.
Yeah, he's a gold bug, they call him. They're, you know, collecting.
You know, I'm not talking about coin collecting. I mean, that's only a different ball game. I'm just using, you know, coins as a way of bartering. Now, you know, a good barter that I would see and would be, you know, a box of penicillin. Or antibiotics. So, you know, that has value on the street or to other people.
A box of OxyContin has a lot of value too.
Well, you know, I'm sure, Leo, but, you know, you know, picture yourself, let's say, being out of work and having a family and somebody gets sick and you don't have medical insurance to buy medicine and so forth. I mean, it's hard enough scraping up a few bucks to go to the doctors without going on, you know, the welfare roads. But I'm just saying that, you know, it's something of value that people would want or would buy or barter with you for. So I'm just using that as an example. Another one would be toilet paper. I mean, you know, in
a shortage of toilet paper could cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, well, they stopped making Montgomery Ward catalogs.
Right.
I'm only joking here.
There was Roebuck catalogs, too. I don't remember.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Okay, guys, clean up your
house. Okay.
No,
you know, it's those necessities of life, the things that are real, that are making a difference now. And just like a lot of people are going without cable TV because it is outrageous. And, you know, it's it's not a basic anymore. You know, it's a it's
well,
one of those monthly bills.
Yeah, but, you know, this is why I still don't understand this this changeover to digital, you know, other than it was lobbied big time by the cable companies.
Right.
All right, so that everybody could wind up, you know, having to join a cable company or a satellite company or something. So it's like, I mean, I think there was like 20 or 30 or 40 million homes or something in the country that don't have that used antennas and didn't have cable or a satellite, you know. And
mm-hmm.
those people are going to be affected by this change in June. You know,
they want to. As customers,
right.
They want their money.
Yeah. Now they're going to pay for the damn thing. But before, they didn't have to pay for it. You know?
Yeah, but look at the consequences of doing that. We are taking our ability to just tap into the ethers and communicate back and forth free. And that's basically what a radio transmitter does. It transmits the signal, and your receiver will pick that up. And convert that into sound. And
well, what are you
that's
talking
free.
About right now? You mean,
yes.
Television. Yeah, I mean, it's going to go by the wayside. You know, TV is going to go to hell because you're going to have your everything's going to be computerized, and you know, everything's
going to be over the internet.
It's going to be over the internet. So people will be looking at internet movies instead of television.
And you'll be able to.
Yeah.
Into your TV.
I think TV is a dinosaur, you know, and everything now is the internet, you know. Television is a dinosaur. It's
old technology.
Yeah, it's really. People still watch it, but it's if people have to start paying for it, you know, all those people that were watching it for free, shit, they're not gonna pay for that. And for their internet, and for their phones, and for all of this stuff. Well, why bother? They'll just get everything over one over the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And in the meanwhile, they'll douse you with a cable TV. But what they've done is they've taken the ability that you have to tap in and listen to what you want instead of what they want you to see.
That's right.
And that is, I think, it's taken away the rights. Or the rights that we have to do that ourselves. It's like a GPS system in a car. We give up the right to learn how to move ourselves, you know, to a gadget on the windshield. And, you know, it's amazing where people don't know how to get to places other than they know how to feed it into the machine. And it's complacency in our lifestyle and what we take for granted.
Right.
But in the meanwhile, you know...
Is almost extinct, right? Maps are will soon be extinct. You know, everybody will have a GPS device.
You know, Leo, I was thinking about this midpoint, 1962 to the 70s, and I was trying to remember back and how things were in my life, and you know, I remember I had a driver's license when I was 14 years old, and I had girlfriends 50 miles away. And yet, you know, the maturity and the availability I had was something new that was never we never had before. And it's not a rebelling, but I used it and I put it to work. But I think that was it was an escalation and evolution from the generation before me to my generation. And being part of that era, I was part of the growth and the movements of not saying no, but questioning authority and questioning reality. And, of course, that also was a time where drugs and alcohol became part of our life, and that was part of the residue left over from the years before, and that was the 30s and the 40s. And understand then, you know, there was a problem where drinking was taken away from the people, then given back to them. And the explosion in the expression of our daily routines were set in motion, and it's breaking those patterns from the earlier times. But I, you know, I can get carried away, but I remember the change that I went through trying to break away from all of that, and that's what this generation did. But also, we're at a time now where we have a choice, and you know, instead of building on the old ways, it's got to fall, and a new's got to start. So, you know, with Obama, our government, and so forth, what we're in is we're at a point where we've seen it fall, and we see how messy it is. So our second half hopefully won't be trying to amend it again. It's just letting it fall and starting anew. And things are put into motion, you know, just like alternative energy devices. We have them. And it's not a matter of perfecting them. We have perfected them, but it's the power behind people to move on it that is the scary part. We haven't been able to move unless we've been told to move. So we're in a situation where we're going to have to survive, and the only way of survival is not meant for yourselves, but don't rely on other people. And if nothing else, on a family structure, it's more of a unity understanding where you work as a unit, a smaller unit, not the unit of a corporation. You know, your own world and your own family, and that's coming more and more into play, where the stress of trying to hold everything else together is impossible. And what can I say? This period that we're in right now is part of what we're experiencing. What is good and what is bad, what is good and what is the best way out of this?
During that period from in the 60s, people left their families though, and went to communes and had alternative ways of living.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big social experiment, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But take a look at Madison Avenue, though. That was a completely different world, where that influenced us not only in the movies, but also in fashion and who we are and what we are.
Well, that's true. But I mean, I personally think drugs did most of it. You know, the drugs of that period did expanded everything.
Uh-huh.
You know. For one thing, the Vietnam War. After the Vietnam War, like most of the vets came back and were all heroin addicts. All right,
at the very least, were smoking weed all the time.
Oh yeah, but a lot of them were heroin addicts, and that became a real problem, and drugs became a very, very serious issue in the system. But it was an issue that there was such a great demand for drugs in the 60s. That it exploded, and of course that went into the 70s and 80s, and not even
and we chose the road in this country of having a war on drugs, which meant a war on people.
Right.
As opposed to Europe, which legalized it and made it available to people, they paid taxes on it, and they don't have.
But that's not everywhere. That's just Amsterdam. They still, you know. Marijuana is still illegal in most places.
A lot of places, it's drugs illegal.
Well, I think they're coming around to this now. They're starting to make sense, you know, with these laws. People are starting to realize that, you know, you can't contain the drug industry. It's like the pornography industry or like the alcohol industry or
Leo,
any of these.
Just let me finish. It's a war on people. It's not a war on the substance. That's what it's turned into.
Yeah, of course it's a war on people. You know, and you know, the people that produce it as well as the people that consume it.
I'm gonna pop this up another level here.
All right.
Okay.
Going back to the 60s, what you're saying about drugs is right. But what it did do is activated different programs within our DNA that actually activated and changed us.
Oh, I agree.
All right.
It did. But you know what bothers me? What really bothers me is how that liberal element became such got lost, and you had that conservative element that prohibition element that came back in the 80s and hallelujah and everything else and
they became George Bush or Bill Clinton.
Yeah, so it basically everybody that was a drug addict or an alcoholic during the 70s and 60s and 70s became a born again Christian during the 80s, right? And a born again Republican, a born again Reaganite, a born again everything. So,
all right, let's try to stay with this if we can.
Islam took over during that period, as well as it took over during the 90s.
Into a period of liberalism, which is very similar to the 62-72 period.
Right, exactly.
Now let's bump it up to a higher level here, the physical level, the real level, the body, the person.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, let's go back here. What happened when these codexes, these programs, were activated within the DNA? It changed us.
Sure.
Now, that was just one change. That we went through, human beings. I'm just using that as an example. Let's take a look what now we have. We have children that are being born, that have been born the last 10, 15 years, that they have more codexes or more programs running in their DNA than we do. So who's to say that this revolution, this renaissance we're going through, is that automatically everybody's activates another codex, a couple codexes within their DNA personally.
Well, I'm waiting for mine to get activated.
understand that, who's to say that, that can't happen? These are the potentials that us as humans, we do have, but it's a matter of just putting them in motion. Who's to say that because of the possession of the equinox in the period that we're coming up, 2012, is that point where we can actually activate our DNA and experience what these kids that are being born now have and do, and that includes instant cognition of anything within their world. Who's to say that we can activate it and we would have those potentials ourselves? What we know about electricity and frequencies and so forth, we're learning from these children that the people around them, the families, the mothers, they're changing. What I'm saying they're changing is they have different codexes within their body that are being activated by being around these children. We talked about the Kabbalah. We talked about the energy fields around the body. Just being around these kids, you feel it. You not only feel it. Your whole body resonates with that. Understand that, you are a human body. You're a creature within itself, and it must survive the environment. And it's very aware of any energy fields it comes in contact with. And, in harmonizing with some of these fields and these kids and the love that's being put out, it's fantastic, and it will change in a second. And all your major belief systems tell you, the wonders of miracles and so forth, but they're not miracles. They're actually connecting with the unity of that is.
So I work in a school, and Leo's been in a number of schools, but we have to say, George, we haven't connected with any kids like this.
Mm-hmm.
So where are they, and where have you connected with them, or have you?
Well, being an empath, I'm more in tune with the emotional bodies or their feelings or their auras. I can see these kids. I come close to them. And it's like, not that they're touching me, but their energy feels, it engulfs everything they come in contact with. I've known about this and I've read about these indigo kids. And, it's some of the uniquenesses, the distinctions that I see in the way they think, the way they hold themselves, and deal with the reality that they're in.
Well, here's an example.
And there is a lot written about them, Lola.
Yeah, I know. I've read about them, but I haven't sensed, and I see a lot of different kids, but I haven't sensed that.
Yeah, that's part of the masquerade within the system, itself, but also the medical system, you know, with some of the drugs that we're giving these kids. The medical establishment has been aware of this. And, you know, part of the work with pharmaceuticals over the years is actually to not inhibit, but to restrain, you know, some of the potentials that these kids have. And, you know, I'm saying the potentials not mentally. I'm talking about physically, too. I mean, these kids are eating and digesting foods from all over the world, and yet their system, their body is adapted to it. Just like we've adapted to, you know, diseases and so forth over the years with different blood types that Homo sapiens have taken, type O, type A, type B, and so forth. But these are just the ongoing changes. The pharmaceutical companies are aware of this. The medical establishment is aware of this. And that's why they monitor and they follow everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're continually putting kids on drugs. But I think that from what I've seen, I mean, you always have some bright person and some very unbright person, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mentally handicapped, mentally retarded.
But that's always been so.
You're not really dealing with anything that's not, that hasn't been there all along. I can understand and I can see maybe the exposure that a lot of kids are getting today from television and internet and so on, that might be creating more connections, okay? So
they're
more worldly today than they were. But I don't know if they're that much more intelligent, all right, because they're
does it matter?
Does it matter? Yeah. I don't know if it matters or not. It's just that they're having tremendous amount of different influences. Get Anthony on the line here. Would you want to talk to Anthony? Or?
Sure.
Hey, Anthony.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
How are
hey,
you?
Hey, George.
How are you
I'm
doing,
good.
Anthony?
I'm doing great. Just got out of a gym class, out of an exercise class. I decided to get my body back into tune. So it was torturous, but you know you have to do what you have to do to maintain the physical as well.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the conversation? I was something about I tuned in when you were talking about pharmaceuticals and whatnot. What's going on?
I was talking about the different changes that the kids, these younger kids have now, and how a lot of this can be seen through the DNAs and the codexes that are activated.
Oh yeah, system. Yeah, there is a difference.
We're looking at some of the revolution that happened in 1962 to 1970. And the changing of the times. We're looking for the new Renaissance, Anthony. And I think the Renaissance more is in the physical instead of the mental realms of what we have to look forward to. How do you feel about that?
I feel you're probably right. At the same time, you know, we are energy, we are light, and you know, this physicality that. That we use to animate the light is just that, you know, it's really just a shell. So
the only problem that is what we were talking about is what the problem is you still have these physical limitations, all right? These physical limitations, like you have people that have maybe they're all born with great souls, but they're born into deformed body or an autistic body or some
disease,
who knows?
Like Parkinson's or
leukemia or all of these horrid all these many things that kill children.
What it really matters though is how you utilize your life while you and the time that you have while you're in the physical and what value you create for humanity. You know, look at Stephen Hawking. You know, look at all, you know, everyone, you know, we all have limitations. Everyone has their own limitations. Even the sun has its limitations.
It's all character.
No, Stephen Hawking is true, and there are many other people that are that way. But I mean that contribute tremendous things that have been handicapped. But what I'm saying is that you also have people that I mean Stephen Hawking happened to be unique that he had a 300 IQ, you know, and he was suffered from cerebral palsy and whatnot. But if you take somebody who was born and has a mental capacity of we'll never have more than a mental capacity of a 5-year-old, all right? That's a problem. I mean, there's no indigo child there, you know. This is probably you know what I mean. It's like that. What I'm saying is, see, I do a lot of work with special ed kids and in the school systems and hey, you do have some brilliant kids who are working through handicaps.
Learning
disabilities and so on. But you also have tremendously limited children and that will need help throughout their whole lives if they live long enough.
Yesterday, George, Mr. Steele, I was in a classroom teaching some children, you know, I don't know if you're aware of the Junior Achievement Program.
Oh, yeah.
I was in the classroom teaching these kids about the importance of newspapers, you know. And, you know, interspersed within this classroom are the quote-unquote special education kids. But, you know, there's this one young man, he's just, you know, he has those limitations that you speak of. But just his sincere, warm attitude towards, you know, just learning inspired me. You know, his life and his presence inspired me just made me feel good, you know. So, you know, sometimes, you know, even though you feel that you're limited and, you know, that your life doesn't seem to be quote-unquote normal, you know, that energy, you know, does bring hope and value to other people's lives even without you knowing.
No, they do. I'm not saying that it doesn't. What I'm saying is that, you know, certain kids are not going to be Hawkins. You know what I mean?
What does it do for the participants, though?
Accept that. And the parents have to accept that, and the world has to accept that, because that is reality, right? And unfortunately, the systems don't always accept that, okay, for a lot of these kids. A lot of kids, not just these kids. But, And the problems with these kids is not just it may not be physical at all. It may be totally emotional. Okay, it may be
behavioral.
It has nothing to do really with their ability to think. It's how they react. It's how they relate to others and relate to the world. I mean, you can have a kid with a 1,000 IQ for crying out loud, but he can't at all relate to the world. And you need somebody special to be able to bring that out, or you have somebody who's severely autistic who can't communicate at all. It's these kind of things that you deal with the inequities of life. Yeah.
Yeah, but Leo, where's enough? Where does karma end?
I don't know, George. Damn, I don't know, but I tell you, it's...
I do know, and it's at the end of the cycle. That's the cycle we're in right now. Understand karma is only a temporary illusion to our spiritual journey. We're sentinel beings having a human experience. We pick our destiny and our lifestyle, what to experience. It's not of what we have to give to other human beings. It's what we give to ourselves and experience ourselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is just a role that we put ourselves into. I believe we have that choice to do that, the free will. And part of that free will is the change that we're experiencing from going from a third dimension to a fourth and a fifth and going higher, getting out of this physical plane. And it's just a vehicle. The life we live and the body that we have is just a vehicle for the experience. But this is not the whole experience of reality. We have to let this go, just like we have to let the childish things go. And those childish things are physical things, or physical or third dimension. And you know, it's once we break away from the bonds that we have on this, that our emotions, our imagination can take us away from it, because we're locked within time, we're locked in with linear time. And once we're able to stop that, we could see the larger picture and move on.
I agree with you on that, but I also believe that the mind locks us right into not even to this life, but also into the next life. And what emotional stresses and what we were most concerned with and what drove us probably to our death is what will keep us suspended in that next realm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you know, that's what keeps pulling.
So how do you unsuspend yourself?
What's that?
How do you break away from that?
Well, only through wisdom, compassion for others, understanding.
We'll come to the understanding, enough is enough, let's get on with things.
Exactly.
And that basically is why reincarnation was put into our belief system.
Yeah. But you know, George, you know as well as I do, we run into them all the time. People that don't see what's in front of them, people that
mm-hmm.
continue to work on the same.
But that's their problem. That's not your problem, Leo.
No, I'm not saying it's my problem. I'm saying that you know, people are, you're going from the third dimension. How do you go from the third dimension to the fourth? Well, you die. Okay, it puts you into another dimension. But what happens is that it continues to, these people never broke away from whatever it was that drove them into the karmic existence to begin with. So what happens is they wind up repeating that in another life, in another life, in another life. All right?
That's really not true. I mean, that can be true, but I don't think that's true for everybody.
No, not if you're ready to not if you have jumped off the samsara wheel, or not if you have been able to break away from that, from your anxieties and from that, you know.
Well, the Buddhists say you have to focus and breathe and get your body into the right physical condition before you can ascend, and your mind has to be
pure. Yeah, your mind has to be, well, you have to embrace, you have to have the wisdom, you have to have the compassion to understand humanity, and once
that's
you do,
right.
Then you understand yourself. And by understanding yourself, then you can go then you can get off the wheel
the
of sorrow,
wheel. Yep.
The wheel of sorrow, and be able to get onto the higher dimensions, and the higher existence.
And although it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Well, it's also for you to experience too. You're here to experience not only the good things in life, but also the bad things in life. And
well,
if you keep closing your eyes to it, you'll never be able to experience it. So,
there's a simultaneity as well. It's kind of like we're all learning together, but right now I'm kind of hungry. So these conditions are what we call mutually inclusive. I mean, they're mutually inclusive. So, you know, you can have a person that's quote-unquote special, but at the same time, they have the capacity for enlightenment, and they do have the essence, you know, it's because they have life, and life is the Buddha. Life is enlightenment. Life is God. God is love. And as long as you have that capacity for love and compassion, you have that capacity for enlightenment as you are in this lifetime.
Oh, yeah. No, you
But you'll always have it. It's not something that you turn on and off.
You have it, but you're not aware of it.
No, you're aware of it.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, well, it's just like the, you know, the that other side of you that's sitting on your other shoulder. You know, it's like the devil and the angel. You go back and forth, and that's our nature. I mean, we're all children at heart, and understand this is how the mind thinks and how we program ourselves to program within the outside world.
Yeah. Oh, that's very true. But at the same time, we all have, I believe we all have the ability eventually, you know, to discover the way off the wheel, you know, to discover our way to the next level, to the highest level.
That's what Buddhism is.
And that's
about.
What it is. That's nirvana. And that's what we want to practice. We want to discover. And I think we're making ground. I think we're beginning to understand things. I think millions and millions upon millions of people are understanding.
Why can't you just discover that instead of having to go through a routine to discover it?
I agree with you, George. As you are enlightened. You
there
are
you
Christ consciousness. You are the Buddha as you are. You just have to realize it. And
see,
because you breathe. Because you breathe, because you think, because you love.
No, but there's the
this
rub.
Energy that you're using right now is the enlightened, is the Christ consciousness, and all in every form. There's no judgment.
But you said something, Anthony, that is a stumbling block. You have to realize it. You have to realize it, and most people don't.
Well, what's it take to realize it? Either it is or it isn't.
Well,
that's the point,
George. But you know, you've been studying this for 50 years. I've been studying this for almost 40 years or 50 years. You know, Anthony's been studying this for 30, 50 years. I don't know. You know, but I mean, we have been trying to study these things, and we're possibly, I think, we're coming to the realization.
But Leo, you're not trying anything. You're
you
studying.
Are.
So you know, this trying thing, I it's not something that you have to obtain. It's something that you already have. Now, the biggest, what you got to do is sit back and realize this and just understand something you already know. And you just have to click it in.
George, I'll tell you something. 20 years ago, somebody would have told me, nobody told me anything, but I mean, somebody would have.
Is that right, Lila?
Yeah. If somebody would have told me 20 years ago, Leo, you're Christ consciousness. I said, yeah, right. You know, I had to understand. I didn't even understand what that meant. Okay, I didn't understand what unity consciousness meant. I did not really understand the potential, the human potential. I thought I understood it through my own activities, but not until I started to study this stuff, not until I started to understand Emerson and started to understand Thoreau's and Buddha and so on. Not until I read these things and studied these things did I understand what it meant, all right?
Yeah, that show was good last night, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Emerson's show was good. Go ahead.
Lila.
Yes, I'm thinking about the samsara wheel.
Lila.
Yes.
What's one of your favorite songs?
My favorite songs? Oh, I like George Harrison, My Lord by George Harrison.
My what?
The one that...
My Lord.
My Sweet
my Lord.
My Sweet Lord. That's
my
one
sweet
of
Lord.
My top.
Now, when you hear that song, it moves you, yes?
Oh, of course it does. It's a wonderful. I feel God when I hear that.
Now, can you put your can you put that in a bottle? That feeling?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
Everywhere.
And now, Lila, do you need to know exactly who composed that song?
George Harrison.
In order for that song to move you and stir your soul in the way that only you know, do you need to know how George Harrison composed that song and all the lyrics to it and all that, you know, all that? Do you need to know all that? Or do you just need to hear it and let it move your soul?
Well, you also got to understand that George Harrison took 2,000 acid trips.
Right.
When he composed.
My point
the question.
Is, it's not my, yes, Lila, answer the question.
Yes, I agree with you. I don't have to know all of those pieces. I can just feel it and experience it and get in the moment.
Yes, and just appreciate it for what it is and all the memories and the good times that you've had through listening to that song. And this is the same way. It's the same way with understanding that your life and everything around you, you know, dead people cannot do what we're doing right now. You know, you're alive with the Christ consciousness. You're alive, and the spirit of the Buddha, the enlightened spirit, everything around you is love. And that knowing, just knowing that, you don't have to do anything. You just have to love it and experience it for what it is. And that's where you get the, that's where you can connect. That's kind of hard to explain in words.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. You connect to a thing that permeates the whole world. The universe.
Because you are the universe.
Exactly.
You create the universe through your mind creates everything in the universe.
Tell me something, Anthony. Who created analog TV?
Who created what?
Analog TV. We were talking about that earlier tonight, some of the evolution, you know, from analog to digital, and that basically is where we are now with our electronics.
I don't know.
It was something from earlier in the show we were talking about.
We were looking at the period from 1962 to 1972 because it's very similar to the period of time that we're in now.
Which is the midpoint of
Midpoint of the Mayan calendar, and that's why that particular topic came up. It put it in that context, and it makes a little more sense.
Understanding the change that we're going through, even though it's not much, analog to digital, but it changes our lifestyle or the things we do in life, something we did before by these receivers and transmitters is collect electrical signals in the air that were free, and now we're restricting that. But it's just changing, just like our money system is changing from paper money, you know, to or real value, to electrons in a magnetic strip. That basically is a big change, but it's part of the changes that we're experiencing. Do you agree?
I agree 100%. And our consciousness and our lives are the greatest radio transmitters and receivers in the universe has ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And we can transmit and receive whatever we choose throughout. You know, there is no time, there is no space. It's a state of being.
That's what the Mayans are talking about, where, you know, our need upon mechanical devices or artificial things, we're not going to need because we could do it ourselves. This through thought and connecting to the unity of the consciousness that we're all in, bathed in, and actually producing it.
Yeah.
So who's to say that we are coming to an evolutionary point where we don't have to come back with reincarnation anymore? We can accept that we are, and we maintain what we experience and move on. So, you know, it's a change that we're going through, and it's not our whole solar system is going through a change. And part of this has been foretold not only by the Mayans but the Indians. And the procession of the equinox tells the whole story, that it's a time where our life form, our third-dimensional life form, is coming more in direct with the direct energies that hold us together, and that's the center of our Milky Way. And part of the other the sources of energy, being our sun, understand it's just another wormhole connecting, you know, to the center of our galaxy. And we in return are just learning what light is all about, and we've learned the power to control it. And I think that control factors, you know, being the way we are, is changing to independent sources where people won't rely on other people for themselves; they rely on themselves. And there's no reason why, you know, we can't do it. It's just believing it and doing it. I'm rattling on here, but
for some reason I still believe. And you, if you want to go back to the Hopis, for instance, I believed in the blue star theory that's the final prophecy is the blue star.
Yes.
But also
which is the purifier.
Right.
Right.
But they also said that there will be the blue planet and the red planet, and the red will be the Earth, and the Earth will retain those people that don't want to ascend or can't ascend. All right, the people that don't, that it's not that they can't.
Well, maybe they just want to stay here, Leo. Maybe they enjoy themselves, and the Atlanteans was an example of that. Where, you know, they wanted to become gods themselves and become more of third dimension.
Sure.
So,
this is what I'm saying. This is what the Hopi prophecy said, that there will be people that will not want to go on, that will not want to go to the next level. They want to stay in this level. And if you think about it, if you're riding high and you got all the money in the world, all the health in the world, everything that the best of the world, and you're controlling the world, why the hell do you want to leave the world? You know what I mean? That's heaven to you. So it's like in your third dimensional state.
Maybe
so,
that's where they stay.
So but what the Hopis stated was that in the blue star will take people, and the red star will retain people. The people who don't want to go that way, and that's what's about to happen. So it's like this is the evolutionary process of the ascension process, that some will want to and some won't. All right, and I can understand that. I personally would like to.
Yeah, but you understand they both serve a purpose. And I could, you know, I could understand where a person would want to continue the third dimensional life, and taking a look at the grays, dealing with the outer space people here now, and one of the problems that the grays face is that they've stretched their DNA so far that they're losing their substance, and what they did do is they went to the left brain, and where they took the emotional aspect of their reality completely away, including the biology in the changes that they went through, where they no longer had reproducing organs and so forth. But it was a de-evolution, now experiencing the only ways for them to ascend or to complete this experience is they have to feel the other side of life. And the other side of life is connecting with Mother Nature as just one tool or an example of this planet Earth. It's an environment where they become part of, and they must experience the growth not only in our seasons, or like a woman with her 28-day menstrual period, which is locked into the energies not only on the Earth but also the Moon and the Sun. So for us, it could be a confinement for them having to put themselves in a situation. But look at it from the other side. Maybe they needed an environment like this to complete this cycle of experiencing consciousness. And, you know, we can go back to some of the understandings with the Hebrews, where I've said before that they were an off-planet culture. They came here to re-experience life, and part of the Bible code is the story of their journey up until the 28th century. So, you know, you have to look with compassion in a sense. You know, one person's garbage can be another man's feast. And who's to say that they're wrong or they're right? It's just part of experiencing this reality that three-dimension brings us. And the side kicker on this is time. Time is locked into this reality, and it's not continuous in the energy field.
And it's not that difficult. You can really keep it really simple, really simple. You know, like, so all you have to do is, like, close your eyes sometimes and, you know, take it, you know, because all your senses have consciousness. And, you know, people talk about these multi-dimensional realities, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's just the full spectrum of this thing called existence. You know, you take away your hearing, you know, and that's another dimension. You take away your taste, and that's another dimension. And, you know, the more you take away each one of these dimensions and you get to this singular consciousness of whatever you want to do it, or however you want to experience it, and then you kind of gain a keen insight into this thing called reality and the multidimensional aspect of it, and you have a renewed appreciation for the whole integrated conscious mechanism called mind and consciousness and volition and awareness. And then that aspect, like George said, time, when that's put on it, that's the memory, and that's where you really, really kind of learn to love, you know, and appreciate this, you know, this whole, you know, everything, kind of like from the first time, our first conversation 2 years ago, you know? It's hard to explain in words.
Let us go back for a minute to, the Mayan galactic period that we're in. Obama just stated that he just approved the release of the X-Files, all right? And the torture files, the UFO files.
Oh, the UFO files.
All right. So they're expecting to release all this information to the public on all of these files, on all of this, all the information they've collected on UFOs. And the prediction that we stated before with the Mayan calendar is that aliens, we will meet
our
galactic brothers and sisters. Yes.
Right.
So it's just funny that it's just ironic or coincidental that this would be a time when suddenly all of this information is about to be revealed, and possibly even alien life forms will be revealed to us as well.
I got news for you. It has been revealed.
Yes, but it hasn't been. But it's about to be.
More public.
It become public, very public, and it'll be available to
see. Very interesting. Very interesting to see what is said about that.
Yeah, and why we're seeing things, why these UFOs do exist, and where
and
are
maybe
the
it'll be brought into the mainstream media. It'd be very interesting, don't you think, George?
Oh, very interesting. I've been watching this stuff for years.
Oh, I know, but you've done it. From the level of
people kind of smirking about it.
Well, they're conspiracy.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But with us, I mean, but now
it'll be more accepted.
It's laid out and undeniable with the stuff that's out there, okay, and really happened. I'd like to see a guy like Sean Hannity or somebody make fun of that. Right?
Yeah.
I'd like to see them interviewing an alien being, you know. So, but anyway, that's for another show.
Yeah.
I just use the aliens, I think, in understanding some of the feelings that Earthlings have against some of these reptilians and draconians,
going to find out.
But I think within the next year, within this year. They're planning to come out with all of this information and
after all, many of these churches believe in
even the Catholic Church came out and said
angels.
Extraterrestrials.
What are angels?
Yeah, right. You know, this is what I'm saying. So all of these things, any faith.
Well, wait a minute. Let's separate this here if we can. For angels to aliens, you know.
If you believe in anything that you can't
not from this planet
or that you can't see with your eyes, all right, then you know they have to accept the fact that if angels are part of the church law, what they talk about, then they're
extraterrestrial if they're not from here.
Exactly. I mean, it's only logical. They're
right.
They're not of this.
And Buddhists have. Angels and messengers, whatever they call it in their faith.
Leo, what you said, you can't see, but there are other senses of the body that can pick up different things that you can't see.
Yeah,
just like your ears can pick up sound that you can't see.
Yeah, we all do that. But the thing is, unless you can, many, most people, unless you can feel it, smell it, touch it. I don't know whatever you can do with the five
senses,
all of your senses. It doesn't exist. Okay, so based on that, now we'll find that it they will reveal it to our eyesight. All right?
Yeah, but what is it going to do for you?
What's it going to do? It won't do anything to me. I've always believed in aliens.
All right. Then what does other people's opinion have to do with changing it?
Nothing. I'd just be interested.
It's just going to make it a lot easier.
It's just an interesting thing. Not only
is it interesting, but it's going to make it a whole lot easier, okay, for people like ourselves, okay, to talk more about them, okay, and it'll be much more of an accepted conversation, much more of an accepted dialogue, rather than being
treat it as a serious conversation. As something that is, rather than something that might.
As they sit across from a draconian or Syrian or whatever.
But anyway, that's a conversation for our next show. We've run out of.
Yeah, we stopped streaming half an hour ago. So.
Oh well.
3 minutes ago. So.
Great conversation, Anthony. You still with us?
Oh yeah, I'm still here. I was just thinking when you all were talking, and I had a great conversation with Paola Harris. She's one of the Exopolitic directors back last February. You can look into the archives, and it's they predicted and talked about all of this that you all are talking about. It's pretty much happening, and it has to happen. We're not, you know, Santa Claus is he's really not real, and I think everybody knows that. So it's time for everybody to know that. Come on, we're aliens.
There you go.
I don't know.
There you go.
I'm a legal alien, though.
You know, it's kind of absurd. All I'm saying is it's kind of absurd just to even raise the question, does life exist in the universe? Well, duh. We're living, aren't we? Existing? Then, of course, life exists in the universe.
But it's being talked about, and it's been accepted.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Well,
it's totally nuts.
Anyway.
It's just as common as water exists throughout the universe. And, you know, we've had this conversation already.
Anyway.
Well, guys, I want to thank you both for being here. Anthony, it's great to hear from you again.
And you sound very chipper. And,
yeah.
George, you sound great, too.
Yeah, we're glad that you're better
and back on the show. And I hope you have a great weekend.
Well, you folks also. And God be with you. Anthony, peace, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Peace be with you, too. Thank you all.
And I'll speak with you next week, Leo and Lila.
Yeah, you too, George. And Anthony, we're gonna have a Florida like weather up here tomorrow and Sunday. It's gonna be in the 80s.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it hasn't been in the 80s for a year.
Enjoy it.
Greatly forward to. So I hope the people that listen to this show on the archive, since it's not streaming, I hope they are enjoying themselves and having a peaceful time. And we'll talk to you all next week.
Yeah. So good night,
adios.
Guys. All right.
Good night.
Good night.